Okay, hello. It's so good to be back with you today. We're a week away from Valentine's Day, Sweetheart's Day, and if you've heard me before anytime around February, you've probably heard me deliver a message or a form of a message which takes place for people who are honoring Sweetheart's Day. And what I generally say to people wherever I am when it gets into this time of the month of February is that my specific message for Sweetheart's Day generally comes in question form. And the question is, do you have a sweetheart? I've been doing this for, 20-some years maybe is when it first came through me on a platform and in Massachusetts somewhere. It just came through. Do you have a sweetheart? And what I realized was that at that point, I had people raise your hands if you have a sweetheart. And a lot of the couples in the audience or people who had a sweetheart at home or at another church who weren't there, they all raised their hands and I asked them to stand. And there were a lot of people who were sitting and they were looking pretty sad, like, I don't have anybody in my life. And oh my God, he's saying this again. I was here 3 years ago and he said it, and I remember doing an affirmation 3 years ago that the next time I am in his presence on February, when he says, do you have a sweetheart, I will be able to stand up because I will have found my significant other. But what I did was sort of, and it wasn't me because I had no prearranged idea that I would ask the question. And I had no prearranged idea on what would follow it. I was just simply open and allowing myself to be a channel for the inflow and the outpour of whatever the Spirit called holy wanted to say. And what it said that day, these many years ago, was, I am not referring when I ask you if you have a sweetheart, I am not asking the same question as, do you have a significant other? Do you have a husband? Do you have a wife? Do you have a lover? Do you have a friend with benefits? I'm asking if you have a sweetheart. This thing. Do you have a sweetheart? Because if you don't have a sweetheart and you have a significant other, shame on them. If you don't have a sweetheart and you have a husband or a wife, shame on them. If you don't have a sweetheart and you have someone in your life who is in a role of being your partner, your soulmate, the one you have prayed for, if you don't have a sweetheart and they connect with you, they have connected with someone without a sweetheart who thinks they have a sweetheart. So around Valentine's Day, or prefacing Valentine's Day, I like to get together with my brothers and sisters, and I like to bring you into a place that I am brought into by the Spirit each time February comes around. I ask myself before I ever take a platform and ask you all, I look into the mirror and ask myself, Carlos, do you have a sweetheart? Because I know I don't have a significant other. Not at this point in my life. It's just me and two dogs and a cat and a lot of family and friends. But I don't have a significant other. So when I go to the mirror, I'm not asking myself, Carlos, have you found another significant other? I'm asking myself a question that I've asked myself last year. Brother, do you have a sweetheart? Because this is one thing that I've discovered. When I have a sweetheart beating in my chest, when I have a sweetheart that is the altar of God within my body, that place that is the bridge between heaven and earth, when I have a sweetheart, having myself is enough. When I have a sweetheart, my whole world is sweet. And every relationship I have with anybody is sweet. It's my sweetheart becomes you and your sweetheart. So not only when I asked myself this question on February 1st, Carlos, do you have a sweetheart? I was able to realize that everyone I encounter, everyone I live with, everyone in the churches that I'm blessed to be a part of, They are all my sweethearts because they are all the reflections of my sweetheart. Sometimes we lose track of the truth that everything we experience in our surround is an outpicturing of what's going on here and here. The scripture says, God is not fooled and God cannot be confused. It says that whatever, and in the parochial terms or in the biblical terms, it says, as a man thinketh. So we want to make that, we want to turn that into as anyone thinketh in their heart, so are they. You are who you think you are in your heart. When I was a kid and I read this scripture, I ran to my dad and I said, Dad, I think they made a typographical error in the Bible. Because it says here, as a man thinketh in his heart. And you don't think with your heart. You think with your mind. So I think it should have said, as a man thinketh in his mind, so is he. And my dad said, no, Carlos. The thoughts that just pass through your mind, they have some productivity. They have some merit. They can bring forth some level of manifestation, but it's pretty much just like outlining a painting or a coloring book that you're going to do. The mind can only give the outline. It is the heart mind, the intellect wed with the emotions that really makes you experience the world that you experience. So it says people think in their heart. Thoughts that just pass through your mind with no emotion behind them, they're basically non-productive. They are basically impotent. But thoughts come through your mind, especially if they come through a lot and you harbor them in your mind, and they are grounded in emotion, that's where you live. So as you think in your heart, the emotional thoughts that you have, these emotion is energy in motion. And so your heart thoughts, which are your deep core beliefs, they are the ones that are pretty much running our show. And so if you have a sweet heart, you won't actually feel like anything is missing in your life that you don't have a significant other. And if you have a significant other and you have a sweetheart, you are giving that significant other the gift of a lifetime, which is the gift of hooking up with someone whose whole being, whose sense of whole being is independent from me. That this person is not counting on me to make them whole. When I do weddings, I say to the couples when I'm doing the counselings that precede the actual ceremony, I keep reminding them, you know, that wipe one term out of your mind, please, as you are preparing to get married. It is such a bogus term, and it is such a term that has wide swept everywhere, and that is to meet a couple and have either have one member of the couple refer to the other member of the couple as, this is my better half. This is my better half. Well, I say wipe that out, because if you are looking for your better half, what you're going to bring to the table is half. You're going to be half a person looking for another person who is also half a person, so that together you can be one whole person. And then you will become dependent upon that person. And anytime they are not there, either physically or emotionally for you, you will go back to feeling like a half a person. And feeling like a half a person is no fun. It's a precarious position to be in, and it's scary territory to be half a person who needs another half a person so that they can be a whole person in their experience. So I say to couples, make sure that you get your whole being from the source of all whole being that we call God. Make sure that you spend time and energy in meditation, in concentration, in developing your relationship with the Almighty One whom we call God, who really is you without your drama, you without your story, You without your fear, you without any limitations whatsoever, you without your willingness to continue in cycles of dysfunction. God is your highest self and my highest self and the highest self of all of us. So if you go to the source and you deepen your relationship with God and you know that your whole being depends upon God and you're in the bathroom and your significant other is in the kitchen and it looks like your significant other is doing dishes and it looks like you are brushing your teeth, you're not really doing that. What you are doing is deepening your understanding that God is your source. Because if you forget God is your source, you're going to want to make them your source. And guess what? They are not qualified to be your source. Even if they love you very much. No matter how much they love you, no matter how much they cherish you, they don't have what you need. Because the only thing you need is to know that nothing shall be able to separate you from the love of God. That's the only thing you need, is to know that in every moment. Through thick and thin, through the mountain experience and the valley experiences, even when you're putting one foot in front of another foot in front of another foot, walking even through the valley of the shadow of so-called death, if you are grounded in a source called your highest self, your God self, your divine self, the truth of you, the spirit of you, the unending, infallible, invulnerable self that you really are. If you hook up to that and that is your identity, and this person does the same thing, imagine what will happen if you two get together and decide to be significant others. What we have here is quite a different story. This is not my better half. This is a whole being. Just as I am a whole being, and we come together to express our whole beingness with one another, and we remind one another that although I love you and cherish you and am here for you, I am not the source of your joy. Baby doll, if I could be, I would be. If I could be the source of your peace, if I could be, I would be. But I can't be. It's not designed that way. It's not designed that anyone outside of you can source the fullness and tap into the endless well of joy and life and creativity and excitement and all things good and perfect. You get two whole people together who are whole because they are insisting upon connecting and staying connected with the source of their whole being. You get those two people together and turn them into a couple, there is nothing they cannot do. Nothing. The sky's the limit because these are two whole selves. And when you are connected with your source, you have a sweetheart. I do a lot of preaching at a lot of churches, a lot of teaching and seminars and workshops. And one thing I do is pretty much what I see a lot of, or I experience a lot of ministers do. What we spend a lot of our time doing and a lot of our messages doing is encouraging you all to love one another more, to open your heart, and to just identify those people who you hold in judgment, those people who you think are bad people, those people who you think have got it all wrong, those people who are making choices that you do not think are correct choices. I encourage you a lot to identify those people and to drop the rock. I encourage you to know that we all have a tendency to pick up a rock to go stone someone for not doing it right. And it comes from the story in the Bible where the woman is about to be stoned for being caught in the act of adultery. But when the revelation comes through the shining being called Yeshua, or Ishio, or Jesus, call him what you will, he looks at everybody and says, have you never missed the mark? You want to condemn people for missing the mark? Have you never missed it? Who are you kidding? Who are you kidding, pretending self-righteousness? You know, I told you that the Pentecostal relatives that I have in Springfield, Illinois, judge heavily against Unity Church. They think that I am lost and that I've been lost for 40-some years. And they pray that one day I will come to my senses and I will return to the Pentecost way. And I know that there are many people in Unity or many Unity churches that I have been in relationship with over the last 40 years who feel the same way about my Pentecostal relatives as my Pentecostal relatives feel about them. But of course, the people in Unity who feel it feel, well, I feel that way because I just happen to be right. I happen to be right. We have a universal teaching. It's not dogmatic. We're not into hell and damnation. And my Pentecostal relatives in Springfield, Illinois, and Tennessee, and Kentucky, and wherever they're spread out, they're going, well, the reason, Carlos, that we condemn and judge Unity as being off base is because we happen to be right. So we have two groups of people with opposing points of view, but they all are stuck in, we happen to be right. So I spend a lot of time telling my Pentecostal relatives, would you drop the rock on Unity? And I have spent a lot of time in my years in Unity going, will you drop the rock on my relatives in Illinois? Can we just be us and let them be them and go, that's what the world is. It's a variety pack of choices. And what works for some does not work for others. I had a Pentecostal guy come and he tried to get into my church and he tried to get with my ministry. He moved from the Midwest to Massachusetts and I'm going to try out this ministry of yours. And after a few months, he went, Reverend Carlos, I have to go find me a Baptist or a Pentecostal church because one thing I notice about me, maybe it was just the way I was raised, but I don't do the right thing unless I'm threatened. Like the only reason why I don't cheat on my wife is that I'm threatened by what will happen if I do. The only reason why I do try to be a nice person is because I'm threatened by the notion of going to hell when I take my last breath. So you with all of your God is love stuff, and God loves you no matter what stuff, and if you fall, just get right back up and know that God is never condemning you. He said, what you give me for a personality like mine is you give me a license to kill, brother. I can know that no matter what I do, God's going to love me because I'm a part of God. God is love. God has created me in the image and likeness of itself. So without a threat, man, I'm a mess. And he said, could you just put in some threats now and again? And I went, I can't do that for you, brother. I got to follow my own heart. So I wish you all the best in finding a threatening church so that you can be a good boy, so that you cannot be naughty, so that you can behave, so that you can do the right thing by your wife and by your siblings and by your boss and by people in the world. Different strokes for different folks. I didn't try to lean into him, oh, give me one more year, man. Come in my direction. It's like, no, he told me who he was. So for me, God bless New Thought, and God bless Pentecostals. God bless Democrats. God bless Republicans. God bless straight people. God bless gay people. God bless people of all colors, people of all choices. Everybody has a right, and it's all just another flower in the bouquet of all of God's children. It's all it ever is. So I spend so much time reminding you all to love one another that this month, I was in a fever for several days this month, and I love fevers because I feel like I'm kind of in between the worlds. And when I'm in a high fever, I don't know if it's my homegoing time or not. And I spend sometimes floating in between the worlds, and then suddenly I'm back in my body, and then I'm dissociated, and I get to look at wide points of view, and I get to think deep thoughts. And one of the things that came to me was, like, Carlos, I think sometimes you are so busy teaching people how important it is to love one another and to forgive one another and to welcome people into the welcome table that some people get confused about one missing piece. There is a scripture that says, Jesus says, you can forget about all of the laws and all of the prophets if you just do this one thing. He says, love the Lord your God, which remember is your highest self. Love the Lord your God, which remember is the source of you. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, mind, all of your strength. All of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, and all of your strength is how I want you to love God. And then it says, and love your neighbor. And then almost in a whisper, as you love yourself. So a lot of times I think that I concentrate my ministry on love God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, all of your strength. And love your neighbor with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, and all of your strength. And sometimes I don't do enough reminding you of that little part that gets lost sometimes, as you love yourself. I have myself gotten caught in the trap and witnessed other well-meaning, good-hearted people get caught in a trap of forgetting completely, overriding the directive as you love yourself. I have sometimes, more times than I can count, vested far greater an interest in loving someone outside of me than the love I gave to me, to my detriment. I have empowered, I have encouraged, I have supported my own hurt more times than I can tell you about in the name of love. I have been unequally yoked more times than I can tell you about in the name of love. Why are you taking this abuse? Why would you hire the same person that screwed you over three times before? I'm trying to write a different story. I just love him. I'm hoping that this time he rises to the occasion. He's got a reputation of messing up. I want to give him the story of this time it worked out. Or with my son, I spent years knowing I was enabling my son and his dysfunction, his capacity to have a wife, have children, and not have a job because he didn't want to have a job for 6 or 8 months. And so I let him live with me, and I bought their food, and every time they ran in for money, I gave them money, and people said, you love your kids so much. Let me tell you, in retrospect, that was not love. When I was writing those checks, I didn't feel love bursting in my heart. I'm writing a check going, when will you ever get your stuff together? And I look at my life, and sometimes from the outside, it looks like, oh, Carlos, he just loves so much. He's just so, oh, my God, he just gives, and he does, and oh, my God, you can say anything to him, and he takes no offense about it. And it's like I show up on the outside like I'm not taking any offense about it. And someone like, oh, publicly, I've been publicly assaulted and made sure I stayed there with a calm breath and a smile. And I've said, well, if that's the way you feel, that's the way you feel. But I'm not going to let it in. The truth, it was in. And while I'm saying I'm not going to let it in, Inside, I'm saying, when are you going to love yourself enough to put an end to this? When are you going to love yourself enough? You know, as many of you know, I was molested and abused from a child, so I know that that is still in there. It's like where you can't say no to your perpetrator, where you can't scream, and where you can't stop. I have let people live with me without paying any rent. In New York one time, I had a guy who lived with me for almost a year, and every single time it was time for him to bring my rent, he came in the house with a new pair of shoes and a new piece of jewelry and an excuse as to why he couldn't pay me my rent. And for a year, I acted like it was okay because I wanted to be a good Christian and I wanted to do the right thing and I wanted to demonstrate my love for him and all my sisters and brothers, completely overriding as you love yourself. So what I came here to do today was not only to remind you to be your own sweetheart and to get it from God, but to examine your life, examine your world, and see if you, any of you, are on either one of these sides of this particular coin. If there is anyone here who, out of a desire to help someone else, is suffering, this message is for you. I know so many parents who are losing their homes because they have taken out a second and third mortgage trying to help the kids who are using all their money on alcohol, drugs, rock and roll, and sex. And the parents, like I did for a while, are writing those checks, and it looks like, oh, he just loves them so much. They're rescuing their children all the time. Or we're rescuing other people because we've overridden as you love yourself. If helping you is hurting me, then I'm not helping you. And if helping you is hurting me, I'm not helping you. So no one is getting helped when helping me is hurting you. So to be able to look at our lives and see, am I unequally yoked with someone? You might find out that you're the one being helped and that you are being enabled not to be functioning at your highest level because you don't have to, because someone is taking care of you. Or you might identify someone in your life that you are doing that too, that they don't have to rise to their highest level because you are there always rescuing them, rescuing them, rescuing them. It's like the guy whose mama took him to Mexico and they just got back from Mexico. There are so many people in my life who I have put under a mental state of affluenza. Like, oh my God, it doesn't matter. I can go to Carlos. Carlos can't say no. He just can't say no. But we're enabling, or we are being enabled. So look at if there's a possibility that you are on either side of this fence, if you are not being all you can be. Because it is true that if helping you is hurting me, I'm not helping you. No matter what it appears to look like on the outside, inside of me, I am not happy. And inside of you, neither are you, even though you might look like it. There's a statement that is not in the Bible, but many people believe comes from the Bible. And that statement is, God helps those who help themselves. When I got this revelation to speak about this this month, I realized if God helps those who help themselves, how many people have I cut off God helping? Because when God was going to help, God went, oh, Carlos is already there. He's already there. He's got his checkbook open. Or he's already there. He's inviting them to live with him. Or he's already there saying, no, it's okay. When in his heart, he's going, this is not okay. So the only way for us to get the help from God, according to this statement, is to be willing to help ourselves. So there are many ways that we can help ourselves. And one way is to be honest. Just to be honest, to take a good, honest look at ourselves. Find out what perks we might be getting with wanting to do God's work in the life of our children, our siblings, our loved ones, our husband, our wife, the people at work, or whoever. Like, do we want them to be all they can be, or do we want to stunt them and stifle them in the name of loving them? And to use our own feelings as a barometer, because our feelings ring true. No matter what we're doing for someone, you can tell that it's God in you that is wanting to do something, and you can tell that it's helpful. When you go to be helpful, your feelings will tell you. You will feel good about yourself, and you will feel good about them, and you will feel that you are aligned with the universe's purpose for your life and their life. If you don't have all those feelings of open-heartedness and joy at your service, then your service is of no service. Once more, if helping you is hurting me, I'm not helping you. If helping you is hurting me, I'm not helping me. And if I'm not helping me or you, what am I doing? Let me catch myself and stop myself. And let me say to myself, how can I love me more? If you love yourself more, it might look to some outsiders like you're not loving. I told the church in Amherst, if my son were to show up at my door tomorrow and say he was homeless and that either I take him in or he and his family will go to a shelter, I would give him a ride to the shelter. It might look like I don't love him. It might look like I'm not loving, but I, historically, every single time that I have allowed him to avoid the circumstances, to avoid rewards and consequences. If you cannot pay your rent and get kicked out of somewhere and I take you in for free and you know you can stay there for free, you have missed a valuable lesson, because at some point you're going to need to go out there, because daddy's going to be dead someday and daddy ain't got no $100,000 insurance that he's planning on leaving you. You got to learn to do something now. So it's an important thing to look at your life. Are you leeching off of somebody? Are you allowing someone to leech off you in the name of love, wanting to show up as God's love? If you want to show up as God's love, you require yourself to be all you can be. And you open up the invitation for everyone in your field to be all they can be. And you become unconfused about what is helpful and what is enabling and hurtful. This will clear the way for you to have a sweeter heart. And it will clear the way for them to have a sweeter heart. Because if we tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, we're never fully joyously happy when someone else has done our work for us, because we have no sense of growing self-esteem, no sense of integrity, no sense of being able to say, look what I, a God self, can accomplish. Don't deny that gift to yourself, and don't deny it to the others. And a sweet, sweet heart to each and every one of you. And if you don't have a significant other, spend your time developing your own sweetheart. And if you do have a significant other, spend your time developing your own sweetheart. And if you don't want nobody, spend your time developing your own sweetheart. Thank you.
as we are remembering how blessed we truly are, and take a breath as we prepare for a few moments of going in a little deeper, allow your feet to be flat on the floor, and clear your laps if you're able to, and close your eyes if you choose to, and take inventory. Inventory of your body, breathing into any space of tension, opening your hands, feeling gratitude for the breath. And in that space of gratitude, being thankful for life itself and being thankful for this present moment. Knowing that right now, no matter what is happening outside of you, happening in your life, happening in the lives of your friends and your loved ones, that right now, God is and all is well. That God is and all is well. And as we relax in that knowingness, as we say it, affirm it, know it, and breathe it through every cell of our being. If it didn't walk in feeling that way, but we begin claiming this truth, the cells of our being will shift. And we may feel differently. We may sit up a little taller, stand a little straighter. Feel the strength of our being strengthened by the truth of oneness. By the truth of knowing we cannot be separated from the love through which we have been created. And as the essence of us, as we know the essence of our being is love, unconditional love, love for the sake of loving. We know our wholeness. We remember that we have been birthed here with all we require to create and live our best lives. We can ask ourselves, self, are you ready to nurture that seed of greatness that has already been placed within? Perhaps you don't feel ready at the moment. So are you willing to be ready to nurture the seed of greatness that is already in you? Transformation begins with a change of mind, a change of heart, a change of thought. So as we go into the silence, rest in knowing that seed of greatness is in you. You've already got it. Feel gratitude for knowing it's there and for harnessing your strength, courage, and leaning into your faith that's already there to know you can nurture it in the silence. In a moment, an idea of truth can take hold. And we are so grateful for being alive, living in a sea of endless, limitless possibility, knowing that all things are possible.